Hey, it's Gemma Spegg, host of the Open Mind Original podcast, Mantra. Every Monday, I'll bring you a new mantra, a simple yet powerful phrase to help you clear your mind and stay grounded amidst the chaos. I'll also share some personal stories, journal prompts, and a weekly challenge to bring each mantra to life. Follow and listen to Mantra, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Open Mind Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Let's go to the phone lines right now to be joined by Josh Vernier, who is live in, now he's not at Kauffman Stadium, actually. They don't have a game today. He is at home. He is about to head to Hollywood Casino because we are having a Royals Roundtable Friday, March 28th. That is today, inside the sports book at Hollywood Casino. Vern's going to be there. Michael Massey is going to be there. Kyle Isbell is going to be there for a Q&A that starts at 6. There's also going to be a meet and greet with the players. That starts around 6:45. Come up, grab a beer, say hello, take a picture with Michael Massey, take a picture with Kyle Isbell, and get, you know what, get your baseball signed by Josh Vernier. That should be the real reason that people head out there. Vern, how you doing today, my man?
I think you got it all backwards, man. You want to take a picture with me, get their autograph, and then hit up that sports book, make some wise bets.
No, I mean, I said it right the first time. I don't want anything signed by Kyle Isbell. I want my Royals jersey autographed by the voice, you are the people's voice of the Kansas City Royals, Josh Vernier.
Hey, I'm not going to fight you on that. I'll take that. And excited for tonight. Should be a good time. Heard it's going to be a great turnout. Hoping that all Royals fans that are of age can make the trip out there to Hollywood Casino. Two homegrown Royals talking about, well, in Kyle Isbell's case, I think his fifth opening day. And Michael Massey's second opening day yesterday. So didn't go the way that the boys would have wanted, but this is certainly a team after what they went through last year that is not going to be shook by one painful loss to open up the season.
So let's start with this. I led the show with, I think if you were looking for reasons on why the Royals can make the postseason, they were available on opening day. When they scored the three-run inning, they scored that run because of Bobby Witt's speed. They also scored it because of Vinny Pasquantino. If this team is going to do something, you're going to need those players to be at the middle of it, and they were in the middle of how this team got a lead, why they lost the lead, questions with the outfield that led to some big mistakes from the Royals, and there's also questions about the bullpen and do they have enough arms in the bullpen to hold on to leads like they had yesterday. I think it is the ultimate, you can look at it glass half full, glass half empty, depending on what side you want to view it from.
And because of what they did last season, I would assume, I believe I know, that a majority of people listening right now decide to look at the glass half full. The Lucas Ursegg, Hunter Harvey, Carlos Estevez, 8 up, 8 down. That choose to look at, yeah, Vinny having a nice day. Michael Massey coming through with that big sacrifice fly. I understand Kyle Isbell and Dairon Blanco's base running blunder was the, you know, negative light of the game. It's not obviously the sole reason why you lost, but if we're going to talk about the outfield offensive disappointment of 2024, you know, Kyle Isbell gave you offensively, at least at the dish, everything that you could ask from a number nine hitter. A big double to jumpstart that three-run third inning. He's the first one to score on that three-run bomb off of the bat of Vinny Pasquantino. And then I don't know how he turned and squared up that bunt to advance Dairon Blanco to third base. So for as much as we talk about the issues offensively from left and right field, MJ Melendez and Hunter Renfroe respectively, what we're really talking about is every position outside of shortstop, catcher, and first base. Because Vinny, Salvi, and Bobby, we know, need to be very good to great for this team to get back to October. But if they're going to improve on what we saw last season, if the sophomore album's going to be better than the debut that we saw last season, well, you need someone else to come up alongside those three. Jonathan India's a no-brainer. To me, he's in that class with Vinny, Bobby, and Salvi, where they need to be very good to great for this team to get back to October. Can Massey be that number five? Can he be that protection for Salvador Perez? There was stretches last season, especially in the second half and even into October, where the answer was a resounding yes. The question is, can he stay healthy for a full 162 and be that number five hitter all season long? He's the best candidate, in my opinion.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, getting his thoughts on what happened yesterday from opening day. What do you think happened with Kyle Isbell? I mean, I'm at the game, and I'm just trying to figure out. You had runner on first and third with no outs. You got to figure out a way to scratch one of those runs across. And then we go from runner on first and third with no outs to now there just being a runner on first with two outs. And I'm thinking, Kyle Isbell, what are you doing here? Can you take us through that play? What did you see?
Yeah, well, on contact, but the ball hit to the third baseman, Jose Ramirez. Dyrone Blanco heads home on a contact play. And instead of running into the out and assuring first and second with only one out, he starts to get himself into a rundown. And when someone with the speed of Dyrone Blanco's in a rundown, the reason why he's putting himself in that position is because he believes he can stay in that rundown to allow Kyle Isbell to replace him at third base and Jonathan India to move up to second base. So even though, yeah, we lose an out and Dyrone's going to run into one, he took it upon himself to try and bide some time for Izzy to replace him at third base, India to get up to second. And as Isbell's making the decision and leaking further and further off of second base, Dyrone begins his, you know, the third leg of the rundown as he's for the second time going from third to home. And in Izzy's vantage point, at least listening to what he said after the game, knowing the speed of Dyrone Blanco, knowing the speed of Jose Ramirez, from the vantage point of Kyle Isbell, he's getting to third base because there's no way that Ramirez is going to be able to lay that tag on Blanco. Now, was Dyrone out of gas? Did he concede a second too early? Possibly. But if you are Kyle Isbell, you need to be assured that you're going to be safe at third base when you make that decision to venture as far off of second base as he ultimately did. So I think both parties were in the wrong. Both were being aggressive and utilizing one of the reasons why they're on this big league roster, and that is their above average base running, and their aggressive mistake ultimately cost him a run and maybe cost him a game. But again, there were so many other aspects. I mean, you look at the final line and Ben Lively outpitches Cole Reagans. That can't happen. You can't go five innings without a base hit, cough up a 3-0 lead. So many things that went into it, but certainly that base running blunder for a team that is built around starting pitching, defense, and base running, to have that be one of the reasons why, maybe the biggest reason why, you lost to a division rival, the defending division champions, a team that you believe you're going to be in a dogfight with for the next 6 months. You know, that's a game that we're not going to forget anytime soon. So yeah, it certainly stings when base running's at the center of the L.
How short of a leash do you think that Hunter Renfroe is going to have? They signed him to a 2-year deal. We are now halfway through that contract. There's a lot of conversation about MJ Melendez. Is this being a very important pivotal season for him? And we'll talk more about him coming up in just a bit. I don't know if Hunter Renfroe gets, 90 days to figure this thing out. I kind of think with the expectations that the Royals have on this season, I think that Hunter Renfroe maybe has like 45, 60 days to kind of get things going this year. I think his leash could be the shortest of any player on their team.
But who's moving him out? Who's that right fielder that you're saying, all right, Hunter, we gave you an opportunity. You're on your way out. So-and-so, the job is yours. I mean, are you trying to see more Dyrone Blanco? Is it MJ Melendez in right field and, Mike Hell at third? So then we get Massey and India in left. I think you'll be exposed eventually defensively there. And if, Renfroe has the shortest leash, we all acknowledge that MJ's right there next to him, debating who has the shortest of the two leashes. Well, they're your two best defensive corner outfielders on the team, more than likely, or at least two of the three best defensive corner outfielders on the team. So, I look down to the minor leagues, and we're not having the Jack Caglione conversation. Nelson Velasquez and Nick Prado can play the corner outfield, but those guys did absolutely nothing to impress in spring training. I don't know what they would have done to suddenly usurp Hunter Renfroe on the roster. Tyler Gentry, former first-round pick Gavin Cross. Cross, John Rave, those guys are interesting. They had really good springs. I don't know if you're going to place them on the 40-man roster prior to you know, late May. Yeah, I think Renfro's at least getting 2 months. I think MJ's getting, you know, I mean, you saw it yesterday, in yesterday's game, and this is what Q's been doing for years. You know, he's going to play the matchups. MJ, Michael, Massey, Izzy, all of these guys are going to be platooned at times. If your name's not Bobby or Jonathan India, Vinny or Salvi, you're not assured of those four at-bats every single game.
Right now, we're talking to our Royals insider, Josh Vernier, here for a couple of more minutes. My biggest take with the Royals this season is, to me, at the top, it comes down to two players. You always mention what a guy looks like on the back of his baseball card. If you look at Seth Lugo, last year is an anomaly from him. That's not what you usually can expect. Can he do that for a second season where you've got him, you got Reagans, you got Waka, you got a really strong 1-2-3 that should be able to stem any tide that you have from the rest of the team? And also about Vinny Pasquantino, can he continue to be a consistent run producer for this team and take that next step? Those are my two biggest questions. Outside of those, what are you looking for? What questions do you have about the Royals heading into this season?
Well, those two, you know, those are two of the big six, the baseline guys, where it's almost cancel Christmas if Lugo, Waka, Reagans, Bobby, Salvi, or Vinny are not very close to the guy that we saw a season ago. Yeah, okay, yeah, Lugo's season was an anomaly. Fine, Waka's 2024 was his best season in 7 years. It was the best year of Cole Reagans' life. It was one of the eight best years we've ever seen out of any shortstop in baseball history, so that's a lot to ask from Bobby Witt Jr. Now, Salvi's coming up on his 35th birthday. Can he really repeat what he did at the age of 34? You know, to me, Vinny's the guy I'm the most confident in his ability to duplicate what he did in 2024. Outside of those constants or guys that need to be constants for this team if they're going to stay in the race, the division race. You know, my biggest question of the season and even dating back to the offseason was, can they replace the innings that you receive the above average, right? Better than league average innings, 170 plus from Brady Singer. You know, what you point out with Lugo and Vinny, and I elaborate on with those big six, that and we can't even have a conversation about October if those six don't match their 2024. But in addition, if you're going to improve on 2024, if you're going to be a, you know, a better team, boy, sure, the bullpen's improvement can help, you know, possibly help replace those lost innings from Brady Singer. But, man, it's more than Singer. Look at the first half of last year. Singer and Alec Marsh, I had conversations at differing points in those first 3 months about, man, is Alec Marsh the third best pitcher in this rotation right now? Is Brady Singer the third best pitcher in this rotation right now? I mean, there were, you know, conversations about can Brady Singer backdoor his way into the All-Star game. You know, your 4 and 5 starters last year for the first half of that campaign were outstanding. Your rotation was one of the three best in all of baseball for damn near the whole season. Not only can Lugo and Reagans and Waka replicate what they did last year, but can you get a Singer Marsh type of production in the first half from Bubich, Lorenzen, and possibly Alec Marsh when he returns later on in April? It always comes back to pitching, and for as much improvement as we're expecting to see out of this bullpen, a bullpen's only as good as its rotation allows it to be. So you need innings logged the way that they were last year to allow Estevez and Hunter Harvey and Lucas Erceg to be the type of dominating force at the back end of this pitching staff that we're expecting. So my biggest question after those big six are the 4 or 5 in this rotation, which right now, Chris Bubich and Michael Lorenzen.
Last thing here, Vernon, I'll get you out of here with this. As someone who, you have not grown up a Royals fan, but at this point you are in it. You've been in it now for a decade. You know this team as well as anybody. Do you think the Royals can do anything to get that benefit of the doubt? Because I'm guessing. I did not listen to the post game yesterday. I did not see the text line. I'm assuming the text line was a rain of negativity.
Yeah, where, didn't even open it.
Yep. Yeah, where, you know, if it's if it's KU that gets off to a slow start, there's a confidence that Bill's going to figure it out. Chiefs could start 1-2. It doesn't matter. They got Patrick. They got Andy. They'll figure it out. Obviously, the Royals haven't had the long-term success of those two organizations. But can you see us getting to a point in a, let's say, the next 12 to 18 months where there is that benefit of the doubt where one loss in March doesn't mean Chicken Little, the sky is falling with this organization?
Well, I don't know if that would ever come across on sports radio or on the text line, because sports radio and the text line and social media were created to complain and scream and yell. So, I mean, C-Dot, you read the text line after the Chiefs lose early, and then that's a dynasty that's still underway across the parking lot. So, No, I don't think there'll ever be true tangible evidence of the Royals receiving the benefit of the doubt. But, you know, I think Ned got the benefit of the doubt after he won the World Series from some. But again, it's never going to be all. And again, it's never going to happen on a postgame show. I'm not expecting it. But yeah, you know, if the stadium stuff gets put behind us and a world title is put before us, well, then, yeah, John Sherman and J.J. Piccolo and Matt Quatrero, yeah, I think they would certainly get the benefit of the doubt, because even the way that it ended with Dayton Moore, I think he's still beloved, you know, by Royals fans because he delivered that title. You know, Ned Yost was the shepherd in 2018 and 19 in those miserable seasons, but he was still on his can't tell me nothing tour because he was coming off of that 2015 title, and Ned's still a beloved figure. I mean, there wasn't many people in spring training that were more celebrated by the fans than Ned. The amount of pictures and autographs I saw the Royals Hall of Famer signing out in surprise was, I mean, obviously deserved, but also made me chuckle because of, you know, surly Ned and, you know, what he used to be. But no, win a world title and you'll get the benefit of the doubt from the level-headed Kansas City sports fans.
That is our guy, Josh Vernier, joining us on the show today. Be sure to check him out later today at Hollywood Casino. Vern will be there. Michael Massey will be there. Kyle Isbell will be there. They have a Q&A starting at 6 o'clock, followed by a meet and greet. The players will be around. They'll say hello. They'll shake some hands. They'll kiss some babies. They'll sign some stuff. It is free to the public. It's a casino, so you got to be 21 year old to go there. So if you want to go out there, say hello. And all of us from 96.5 The Fan will be there. We're heading there after the show today. Vern, I appreciate you, man. It's baseball season when I'm looking forward to talking to you every Friday, man. Thanks a lot for popping
Happy
on
to today. Be back, buddy. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. That's Josh Vernier joining us on the show today. Let's talk more about that coming up on the other side. I just want to get a gauge of where you guys are. 913-586-7965. Scale of 1 to 10. Now, maybe I am letting the text line ruin my opinion. I'm personally at like a 2 based on what happened yesterday. Rob, we'll get your number. Text line, I want to know where you guys are, because I think when the Royals lose, especially when they lose the way that they lost yesterday, it usually gets magnified very differently than it does with the other local teams. We'll talk about it next. Keep it right here. It's The Drive.
Hey, it's MJ Melendez from the Kansas City Royals. You're listening to The Drive with C-Dot on 96.5 The Fan.
Brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
Now, I am willing to acknowledge, as we are starting this conversation, that maybe, just maybe, this is the vocal minority. So this is not an indication of how I think Royals fans as a whole feel. It's just what is in front of me. I am curious after one game what the level of panic is amongst Royals fans. So if 1 is this is absolutely nothing, 10 being this is the worst thing that could possibly happen, where are Royals fans right now? Because at least my perception is I don't think that Royals fans are patient like the other fan bases are. I don't think they're patient. Now, some of it, I think, stems from time. I mean, Bill Self just had 2 of his worst seasons at KU. All KU fans seem, oh, it's going to be fine. Hey, we got Darren Peterson coming in next year. We got this Bryson Tiller kid coming in. We're going to hit the transfer portal. Hey, we're going to be good for next season. We know that we're going to be back. All right, cool. The Chiefs. I mean, I've been here enough. I mean, when the Chiefs won some of the Super Bowls, they got off to a slow start. A couple years ago, they lost their season opener. Travis Kelce was hurt. Chris Jones was hurt. Hey, we got Pat. We got Andy. We got championship pedigree. Why are you guys overreacting to it? That is usually the stance that you guys have. And I get it. The Chiefs are the best football team in the world. The Kansas Jayhawks have been one of the top five college basketball programs. That's not what the Royals have been. But I don't really think anything changed yesterday with the Royals other than we finally got to see them. Whatever you were happy in, and if you picked the Royals to win the division, they showed you how they could win the division. They showed you that yesterday. If you are a pessimist and think that the other shoe is going to drop, then you have your reasons to be pessimistic. You can play the "see I told you" game today. I do want to read one text because I thought this was a very interesting text. C-Dot, the only thing that has me worried is it didn't look too different from last year. I really don't want to be scratching and clawing for a spot in the playoffs. We should have the expectation to win the division and not be fighting for it. Well, I'm here to tell you that every Royals team that you have ever seen has been a fight, except one. This team just isn't the 2015 Royals. Like, one thing I think we can agree, and it doesn't matter how optimistic you are about this team. Like, if I read to you the lineup on opening day from the Royals in 2015 compared to where they are now, it's not close. Like, that team had this is their lineup, Rob. Alcides Escobar, Mike Moustakas, Lorenzo Cain, Eric Hosmer, Kendrick Morales, Alex Gordon, Alex Rios, Salvador Perez. Salvador Perez on opening day in 2015 hit eighth on that team. And Omar Infante hit ninth. Salvador Perez, a decade later, is now in the heart of your lineup, and you need him at age 34 years old to be a proven run producer for you. I know we don't talk about that Royals team like they were some star-studded Los Angeles Dodgers team. Hey, I mean, look at the six-hitter on the 15 team and look at the six-hitter on the 25 team. Look at who hit 7th and 8th on opening day in 15 and look who hit it. This Royals team ain't running away from anybody this season. They're not talented enough to run away from everybody. Not when you look at the bottom half of their lineup and you got Mikel Garcia and Hunter Renfroe and Kyle Isbell. When you got those guys that are starting from you, you're not winning 95 games and running away and hiding. It's going to be a up and down, day to day. You're going to be tracking this thing for the next 6 months if you think they got a realistic chance at the postseason. The only reason I ask this question, the only reason why I bring it up is just benefit of the doubt. And I would love to get to a point where the Royals get that benefit of the doubt when something goes wrong early. And something went wrong yesterday. It was a beautiful day out there. Rob, I wish you had the chance to go yesterday. I mean, it was 80 degrees, light wind. The crowd was into it. They were engaged. The hot dog derby was phenomenal. I mean, it was a great day to be at the ballpark. And it was actually a really fun game for the first, I don't know, two and a half hours or so. It didn't end that way. It did not end that way for them. And honestly, that's kind of been the case. So I looked this up. Actually, I did not look it. I found it, but it was on Royals Review. Maybe I want to give them credit for what they found. In their last 15 games, even if you include opening day, their last 15 games where they have had 28,000 or more people, they are 3-12 in those games. The games that get you guys excited and the games that everybody is going, they do not win those games. They have not won them the last handful of years. The last 15 times they've had at least 28,000 people. They're 3-12. In fact, Rob, they've lost 9 of those games in a row. 9 in a row where they've had at least 28,000 people out there. I mean, I kind of get it in some aspect, because I'm assuming for the Royals to do that level of attendance, it's the casual fan that's going out there. And I don't say casual as a way to put anyone down. It's fine. Hey, I only go to about 3-4 Royals games a year. And if they're doing well, maybe I'll bump that number up. But I got other stuff going on. I got kids. I got all this other stuff. I'm not going out to the ballpark 12, 13 times a year. So I pick my spots. Well, if you're a casual fan and you're only going to a handful of games, the first one's a really good game to go to. It's beautiful. You can take off work. It's an amazing game. And if you go out there and they look like the same Royals team that you've been following your whole life, I can see how you walk away with a little bit of pessimism based off what you saw. They said that was the best opening day they've had since April of 2017. People are engaged with the product. people know this Royals team and are following this Royals team. But it does feel like more imperative for them than the other local schools. They got to get off to a really good start. That historically, Royals fans are not one in their first 25 games. If they go 10-15, people will start to turn on them at some point. So it's just one game. I'm not burying the Royals. I don't think there's any reason to bury the Royals. They got Seth Lugo going on Saturday. You win that. It's 1-1. You can erase what just happened, and you go into Sunday with a chance to win the series. But we can acknowledge that Royals fans and how they operate, they are probably the closest to Mizzou fans. It don't take much to get Mizzou fans to start, woe is me. It don't take much. It don't take much for Royals fans to have that same mentality as well.
I don't want to join in on running down Mizzou fans, but I would say that's a really good comparison. Because Mizzou fans historically are, we wait and see to join the party too. Like, isn't that how Mizzou fans operate? Man, you know Mizzou business better than I know Mizzou is. It takes more than just, hey, look, it's starting to feel and look better. You have to really, really, really prove your worth as a team, and then the fans show up. But it is fast to woe is me, which is kind of what Royals are. The Royals fans didn't come in droves last year, despite the fact they were battling for a division into September. It was paltry attendance. We played a game on the show based on their attendance. It took a lot for fans to buy in last year, and now they made the playoffs. They took a step forward, and now they're 0-1 with 161 on deck, and fans, or at least a sect of the fan base, is a little bit, the sky is falling. I think your Mizzou comparison is pretty apt because Royals fans are slow to buy in, and the minute it looks like there could be problems on the horizon, they are the first to eject. We're out. And I think the Royals have earned the benefit of the doubt, at least enough benefit of the doubt where we're not talking about 0-1. If the Royals start, you know, if they're 11-26, like we're at near 40 games and they're bad, I will join in and hate disappointment, anger, frustration. But 0-1 is very knee-jerk, and I think your Mizzou fan comparison is near perfect.
Yeah, this is the thing that I think people know, but when you hear it, it hits your ear kind of funny. Let's say that you were like me, and if you had to ask me right now, how many games do I think the Royals win this season? I think the Royals are going to win 87 games this year. And they're going to win 87 games this year. I think that is a very good and fair number for where I think the Royals are. Well, if you win that number of games, you know how many times you lose? You lose 75 times, if that's the case. You can't be on the roller coaster in the same way that you can for other sports because they're going to have more Thursdays like that. They're going to have more games where they get up 3-0 and Bobby Witt does something cool and then the bullpen blows it. That's kind of baseball, right? I don't think that Jonathan India is going to go 0-4 every single night. I don't think he is. I would be very, very surprised if that's the case. I don't think the Royals lose every game because of a pretty big base running blunder that happens late in the game from one of your veteran players or so. But I do think we kind of have to, I guess, acknowledge what the Royals are, which I get it. One of your professional sports teams always figures out a way to win. They've been figuring out a way to win for the last 6 years or so. The Chiefs are a 12-13-14 win team. You know who you cheer for in baseball? You cheer for a 9-8 baseball team. That's what they are. They are a 9-8, 10-7 baseball team. That's what they are. Your 9-8 team is usually going to be frustrating, and they're usually going to drop some games that, man, we had that game. Wait, we were up 21-13 going into the fourth quarter. How did we lose that game? That's what your middle-of-the-road, middle-of-the-pack team is going to do. That's just kind of what the Royals are here. Now, I think, obviously, they're a little bit better than that. They made the postseason last year. They won a series. But if you got them winning around what I have them winning at, and you have them being an 87-win team, man, you got 74 more losses coming up for this team. You can't be high and low based off every win and every loss. You got to take it in chunks. You got to take it in parts of the season. And I think the point that you made earlier is opening day is really the only game that we kind of look at through the lens of a football game. We spend so much time. We spend from May until September getting you ready for one football game. It then becomes the most important thing. And then when it finally happens, we base every opinion based off what happens in that one game. Now, I don't think that baseball has that level, but I'm just not going to overreact to the Royals. I think showing us kind of what I think they are. There's some things that the Royals are going to do really, really well this season, but they also have pretty big question marks. Everybody in their outfield is a question mark. Everybody. All three of them are question marks. Their bullpen is a question mark. The guys that you feel really good about, I thought they were really good yesterday. The other guys, I don't know about that. Angel Zerpa, he ain't coming in and throwing zeros every single time that he's out there. You had some other guys that came in and was kind of in that same, Sam Long, he ain't throwing zeros every single time that he's out there. I just don't want to overreact to one loss that they had, especially when they got two more home games left.
Maybe this is me talking out of both sides of my mouth, because I agree with you on the overreacting. I will say this, though, and your football comparison made me think of this. I'm a person who has the Royals at 88-89 wins this year. I actually I'm picking them to win the AL Central. I think they are the best team in the AL Central. I think it is fair for fans to feel frustrated with your 9-8 comparison, because they were that 9-8 team last year that, hey, scrappy, we got in, we were a wild card for a football comparison. As you said, they were 9-8, 10-7. And it felt like they were going to take that next step. They were about to, they had their scrappy, we got a wild card, and then we bumped our head into a next level. We're ready to take that next step. They were what we thought the Texans would be, we're going to think about the Commanders next season. Oh, they got in. Can they take that next step? I feel like Royals fans were feeling that. So I understand a level of frustration, nothing more than like a 1.5, 2, where you felt like a game like yesterday, winning a game like yesterday is the difference between being an 85-win team and a 91-win team. Because if it is 50 wins, 50 losses, figure out the 62, the good teams, they have a winning record in those 62. And they figure out ways to win games like yesterday. And if Royals fans feel a little bit frustrated today where, hey, I wanted to take this next step, teams to take the next step, win that game, I think it's fair to feel some frustration for the game. I think where Royals fans go too far is they overreact and think the sky is falling. But the first step didn't look like a step forward, but there's a lot of steps left in this journey.
I would like to make one small point. I know we have to take a break. Earlier, we were having a little bit of fun about the 50-50 raffle. And I was joking that, you know how when you watch the television show Price is Right, how when they announce, you know, they announce a name and then that person runs down to the front and they're all excited and they can't wait to meet Drew Carey. You've never seen that moment at the Royals game. Not once. And they come around. I mean, they got people. They really out there working. Nobody at Kauffman Stadium is working harder than the people to get you to sign up for the 50-50 raffle. You start to know their names. They start to become like members of your family. Oh, hey, Bill, hey, how's it going? Hey, go ahead and give me some 50-50 raffle. You start to know them. And then when it's time for somebody to win, you've never seen anybody win. So someone earlier called in and said, you know, hey, I won. I said, Rob, hey, take their information. Rob, what happened? We were supposed to talk to the guy that won the 50-50.
Couldn't get connected.
So let me get this straight. He reached out to us, told you to reach out to him, and now we can't get a hold of the guy that says he won the 50-50 raffle. That's what I didn't have nothing to do with this. I was talking to Vern when this happened. I said, hey, during Vern, why don't you record something with him and we can play the process of what happens when you win the 50-50. But we can't get someone to call into our show.
Couldn't get in touch base.
To tell us the process of what happens when you win the 50-50 raffle. That's what you're telling me.
I don't know if it was just poor timing, but...
Okay, yeah, I'm sure it was.
Couldn't get connected.
Okay, well... 913-587... We're still on the lookout for this. This has turned out to be Willy Wonka's golden ticket. I want to talk to someone that won the 50-50 raffle. That's it. What happens? Do you get a call? Do they write you a check? Is this like automatically deposited into your... I've got real questions about what happens when you win the 50-50 raffle. People are telling me, oh, I want it. How? No one wants to call? No one wants to explain? Walk us through? Okay. All right. We'll see if someone calls and wants to explain the 50-50 raffle. I am very, very curious. And we'll keep talking about basketball. I might have been wrong about something. We'll talk about it. Keep it right here. So Drive.
The Drive with Carrington Harrison. On your new home for Royals baseball. 96.5 The Fan. brought to you by DM Injury Law. Have you or a loved one been in a car wreck? Contact DM Injury Law today and get the money you deserve. Car wreck? Remember, Mike's got this.
All right, we have two people on hold. Rob, what would they like to talk about? I talked to one of them for very, very short, but I was like, hey, you know what? Rob will talk to you. What would they like to discuss? Do they have information? Can they help us in our findings?
They are both people who have claimed to won the 50-50 raffle. One in Kansas City, one at a different location, different ballpark. But they both are 50-50 winners.
Who won the Royals 50-50? I don't know how they do it in St. Louis.
Tommy won the Royals 50-50.
Tommy says that he has won the Royals 50-50 raffle.
And I believe Bob told me that he won in Busch Stadium.
Okay. All right, tell Bob I said thank you, but we're going to take Tommy's call. Again, I can't claim to know anything about the Busch Stadium 50-50. I want to know about the Royals 50-50. All right, Tommy, can you tell us the story? Because I have a lot of questions here, but maybe you'll just answer my questions. So you buy a ticket for the 50-50 raffle, and then take us through what happens when you find out that you won.
So the funny thing is that they were actually playing the Cardinals. So sorry, Bob, you won at Busch, but Royals were playing the Cardinals. This was back in August of last season. And I didn't realize this, but I guess they start doing a cumulative throughout the series. They let that number keep growing, which I'm not sure how that works, but me and all my cousins, we were there. We were sitting in the outfield having a great time. We each bought 40 tickets, and we told each other, hey, if we win, we're splitting this. And my cousin, Becky, she happened to win it. I've got video. It was unreal because I'd never seen anybody win either. But the grand total was up to $128,000. You do the 50-50, take out all the taxes. The Royals sent her a check within weeks, like very short amount of time, for $47,000.
Okay. So you got to go in, you got to get everything verified, and all of us, and then you go up there, and then they make sure you are who you say you are.
She was in the stadium for a couple hours, like probably an hour. She was down getting all her information, and of course she's taking taxes out and all that good stuff. But she came back; it was an unreal experience. And they took a picture with her, the Royals charities, and sent her a check directly. She lives in Wichita, $47,000.
How much was your cut?
Less than it should have been. I thought we were going to go equal. She didn't make it that way. So just probably like a thousand.
Oh, wow. So you're telling me you guys went into it with the, hey, we're going to split this evenly among us. And then when the actual time came, that's not how the money got split up.
It's probably not fair for me to put somebody on blast here on the radio, Carrington. But that's probably how I thought it was going to go down. And if you put yourself in that situation, how would I take care of my people that are sitting right next to me? Yeah, here we are. I'm happy for her. She got a new bathroom out of the deal in her house.
All right, you know what? Let's put Tommy on hold. Let's get Tommy's information. I want to give Tommy something. Now, I can't give him the money to make. Rob, take his information. We'll find Tommy something. It sounds like Tommy did wrong in this scenario. You can hear it in his voice. It sounds like he got done wrong. It sounds like he got finessed is what happened. That's how I hear it. He got finessed. They had a deal. They all equally put in the same. The only way you can't get. No, we all put in the same amount of money here. We all got to get the same amount of money out. I'm not crazy. Text line, am I? 913-586-7965. If we all put in 20 bucks and now we got 100, it doesn't matter whose ticket actually wins. This is what we all agreed to. I want Tommy to get his fair share. And if he can't get his fair share, then I'll give him something. We'll give him a bobblehead or something. I don't know what we got, but I got to help Tommy out. It sounds to me like Tommy got played. It sounds like something went wrong to Tommy. You know what? Now, this started as trying to talk to somebody that won the 50-50 raffle. Now it's turned into Fox 4 problem solvers because we need to solve Tommy's problem. That woman stole from Tommy, it sounds like to me. How'd you hear it, Rob? It sounds to me like he got finessed.
I mean, he at least got the short end of the stick. Finesse might be a bit of an extreme term.
That's finesse.
But there was no tangible promises made, but it's still not great.
Rob, if you and I go to the game and we both equally put in the same amount of money for the 50-50 raffle, and we say before we do the 50-50 raffle that we're going to split whatever money we get evenly, and then you don't come through on your short end of the deal, you finessed me. Yes. You finessed me 100%. You absolutely did. Man, I feel bad for Tommy. What can we get Tommy? We got something? We'll figure it out.
I mean,
we got something.
We're going to do some real scrounging around the office.
Yeah, we got something. We got something. We got about the taxes. I don't know. I need more information, but it sounds to me like something went shady. Even after the taxes, we still can't split the money evenly. I don't know how this works. I don't know. It's all confusing to me. But no, we heard from somebody that they have won the 50-50 raffle. I'm now starting to believe it. I'm starting to have more of a confidence that this is potentially real. We'll get back to the Royals here. We had Vern on the show earlier today. Vern is actually going to be out at the Royals roundtable coming up in about an hour or so. He says that the Royals are relying on the Big Six.
Well, those two, those are two of the Big Six, the baseline guys, where it's almost cancel Christmas if Lugo, Waka, Reagans, Bobby, Salvi, or Vinny are not very close to the guy that we saw a season ago. Yeah, okay, yeah, Lugo's season was an anomaly. Fine, Waka's 2024 was his best season in 7 years. It was the best year of Cole Reagan's life. It was one of the 8 best years we've ever seen out of any shortstop in baseball history, so that's a lot to ask from Bobby Witt Jr. Now, Salvi's coming up on his 35th birthday. Can he really repeat what he did at the age of 34? You know, to me, Vinny's the guy I'm the most confident in his ability to duplicate what he did in 2024.
Rob, I'm guessing, and I don't have the box score up. Maybe you do have the box score up. If we go back and we look at yesterday's game and we look at the Big Six that he is talking about, you didn't get a good enough contribution from enough of those players. Jonathan India is certainly one of those individuals. He had 5 ABs. He didn't get a hit in the game yesterday. He didn't get a hit yesterday. Your outfield let you down yesterday. I mean, it's kind of simple how the Royals lost yesterday.
Perez wasn't very good yesterday. He had 1 hit in the 9th, but they drove in no runs.
Yeah, their bullpen wasn't good enough yesterday. Their outfield wasn't good enough yesterday. Their big offensive addition was not good enough yesterday for them to win. Now, let's see what happens. They got Seth Lugo going on Saturday. You can obviously turn things around, but I don't think it's that hard to kind of figure out why the Royals lost yesterday's game. We will get back to the Royals coming up at the top of the hour really quick. I'm willing to admit that I was wrong about Duke. We'll talk more about it in the hits in the 5 o'clock hour. I've watched basically every dribble they've had in their last two games. I watched them against Baylor, was a beatdown. I watched them last night against Arizona, and that team is good. Really good. They have everything you need. They have the best player in college basketball. Their role players complement him extremely well. That team defends. They get out and run the floor. They can beat you if the game turns out to be high scoring like it could against Alabama. If it ends up being a slugfest and it ends up being low scoring, they're also prepared to win that game. I would say the biggest thing I was wrong about with Cooper Flagg is just his feel for the game and his basketball IQ. That's what really impressed me yesterday against Arizona. Usually young players aren't in control. The game's moving really fast. It wasn't moving fast for him yesterday. He was their best passer yesterday. Their offense ran because of him. I'm going to get in the lane. I'm going to throw an alley-oop. And now when I penetrate, you think I'm going down low. No, I'm going to kick it out to an open three-point shooter, and he's going to knock it down. He was by far and away the best player on the floor yesterday and the biggest reason why Duke advanced to the Elite Eight. They have not really been challenged so far in this tournament. They've not really been challenged. Now, it's going to get tougher. Alabama can score. Alabama also has size with Grant Nelson. Alabama is equipped and can beat Duke. But, man, it's going to take a really, really good effort to knock out the team that I saw take out Arizona yesterday. All right, coming up at the top of the hour, we'll get back to the Royals. We'll also get back to March Madness in the NCAA tournament as we have, I think it was 10 teams left. And we were trying to narrow this thing down to the Elite Eight. Keep it right here. So, drive.